Before we even kick off the podcast, I just want to remind everyone to go like, subscribe, and keep up with these weekly episodes. If you like what you hear, spread the word so more coaches can tune in for our weekly podcasts. All right, here we go. The Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by GameStrat. GameStrat is the number one sideline replay choice for the top football programs in the country. Their system is extremely reliable, easy to set up and use, and they also have the best customer service in the industry. Go to GameStrat.com to learn why more coaches keep switching to GameStrat for their sideline replay system. That's GameStrat.com. GameStrat.com. Before we move on, let's talk about the fastest growing sports team software, All In Team Sports, and how it's helping coaches save time while streamlining their communication, scheduling, and so much more. It's no surprise that coaches are always looking for ways to increase efficiency and save time. That's why this software is so great. It offers coaches all the features they need to manage their teams, from player nutrition and health goals to in-app awards, document sharing, and a team feed that immediately boosts player engagement. This software makes it easy for coaches to stay organized and help their teams succeed. The software also allows coaches to set up a variety of different activities and tasks. For example, coaches can create a schedule for their team, assign tasks to individual players, and even create custom messages for specific groups or individuals. This allows coaches to quickly communicate with their players and keep track of their progress. Plus, the software also allows coaches to create and manage sports-specific activities such as drills and practices. And for all the football coaches out there, they have a video system that is built to work with Huddle that is top-notch. You can sign up today using code HOGFootballChat to get 75 days entirely free. And I promise it will be an app that will replace all others on your phone. Check them out by going to allinteamsports.com or give them a follow on Twitter at allinteamsports. Hi, I'm Coach Tony Schiffman, and welcome to the Hog Football Podcast, where we talk all things football and all things offensive line. Guys, today we've got Coach Ty Rogers. Coach Rogers is currently the offensive coordinator, offensive line coach at Trimble Tech High School in Fort Worth, Texas. And when I tell you this guy's been around the block, he's been around the block. He's got 18 years of coaching experience at the high school, the college, and the professional level. He's been a player. He's been a state champion. He's been a conference champion. He's been in pro camps. He's been a head coach. He's been a run game coordinator. He's done it all. To the moon and back, and I'm super excited to talk to Coach Rogers today. Coach, good morning. Welcome. How's everything going down in Texas?
Well, it's hot, but, you know, that's summer down here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's been particularly crazy when it comes to temperature, but it's good. I'm you know, really happy you decided to let me come on and, you know, I guess haver a little bit. You know, we've had some correspondence in the past through Twitter and some of the people that we are mutual friends and always have some good discussions. So definitely looking forward to this.
Yeah. No, we have. Yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, when I started, not to get off track too much, but when I started this podcast a while ago, that was the reason for it. You know, it was during COVID obviously, but it was just a chance for me to talk to a lot of the coaches that I spent time talking with, you know, like you said, corresponding over Twitter and talking through the chat and things like that. And it was a great excuse for me to know you guys better and to talk to you guys more and you know, find out kind of more about you guys as coaches and people, more so than just a Twitter handle. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's obviously some of the stuff that I think, you know, social media lacks is, you know, we see a picture and we see a statement and we decide we know about people. And,
right.
And, you know, this is not really the case. And particularly as coaches, because, you know, coaching Twitter is interesting, to say the least. and, you know, just like any other social media, there are some people who are genuine and some people who, you know, are just playing a character, playing a role, whatever. Right. And when you get to know people and, you know, find people that are authentic and get a chance to talk to them, it makes for good discussion and you know, you get to take advantage of what social media is, you know, you're in Wisconsin, I'm in Texas. We can talk and share information and, you know, find solutions for things. And that's a cool idea.
Right. No, no doubt. It really is. There are, as you and I both know, there's definitely some cons to it, but I think the pros still far outweigh the cons. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's get rolling here. You know, obviously you've been a part of some really top-notch teams as both a player and a coach. Talk to me about how the offensive line played a role in those teams, in the success of those teams.
Well, first thing is that, you know, my success as a player and my upbringing being involved in football has always had to do with offensive line. My father was an offensive lineman for Auburn. He played in the old World League of American Football for a year. He was invited to training camp with the Chicago Bears, ended up leaving there and then going to the Birmingham team back in the day. And he was, you know, growing up, he was my hero. He was an offensive lineman. He was a converted offensive lineman back in that day. He went to Auburn as a linebacker. In fact, he was one of the best athletes in America. The year he graduated, he won the Sporting News, top athlete in the country. But they had four guys go down. And back in that day, I was like, all right, well, who's the next guy up that has some type of meat on him and that we can put weight on? And he was that guy. And he ended up playing, you know, at Auburn with Pat Sullivan and Terry Beasley and, you know, guys who obviously, you know, made a name for Auburn at that time, even going against Bear Bryant and his teams in Alabama. So that mentality has always been a big deal at the house. And I grew up with that. I grew up as a man wanting to be like offensive linemen are, being a protector, being somebody who, you know, knows when to be aggressive and knows, you know, when not to be aggressive. Watching an offensive lineman growing up, I mean, we're watching football games as a kid, and my dad's like, hey, check out what the right guard did. And, you know, most kids are like, what, the right guard? Who's that? But, you know, that was always something in my house. And so as I grew up and started to play, I followed a similar path. I was a fullback. Of course, this is back in the 90s when you had the old wishbone going on, and you could have a 225-pound fullback that was not quite super fast. And as I got through my high school career, my coach was like, you know, you're a bit big to be playing running back. Let's you know, work on some getting you as an offensive lineman, make you into somebody good. And so, you know, it played offensive line. At Louisville, where I went to high school, we won the state championship in 1996. We were a wishbone team. And I mean, the offensive line was, we were the focal point, you know, 99.999% of the time. In fact, in the state championship game we won against Converse Justin, we had 528 yards of offense and did not throw a pass. So if there's not a more offensive line stat than that in a football game, I don't know what is. So, you know, this has always been a passion of mine. It's something that I grew up playing. I went to college as a defensive lineman. I went to the dark side for my college years. But, you know, coming back through once I graduated and did all that, I went and, you know, bounced around the pros. And again, I ended up back on the offensive line in the Arena League in Canada and bouncing around through different NFL camps. Was good enough to make, you know, a training camp roster, never really good enough to stick. But this has always been something that I've, you know, been involved with. And when I got into coaching, it was not, you know, not just a natural fit, but it was something I have a passion for. And I think good offensive line coaches, there's nothing that makes you more happy than watching those five guys work together and succeed. I think mainly, you know, because a lot of times people expect offensive linemen to fail.
Right.
Or try to, you know, when they do fail, go, oh, well, you know, they're just not very athletic and, you know, we just got to get in the way and all the other things you hear. You know, this guy from the stands talking about, you know, hey, why don't you block for that running back? Even though he ran the wrong hole and ran right into the linebacker.
Right.
you know, so it was, It's always been a passion of mine. I've coached every position on the field at some point, both offense and defense, which has been crazy. But my passion has always been offensive line. And as I've continued my coaching career, it became the specialty that I had. And thankfully, I had some really great kids and really great adults that I've coached over the years that bought into, taking the coaching that I gave them. And some of them were super talented also, which helps. I've had some success with guys being all district and all state and going to college and going to pros and all that. And once you get in that world, I mean, it's something that you don't really want to get out of. And I don't, regardless of where my career goes, I wouldn't, if I meet all the aspirations in my football career, I'll always be an offensive line guy, always right. be tied to the development of offensive line. Because it is certainly the passion of my career.
Right. No, that's awesome because it takes a special person to coach that spot. You've got to really buy into what you're doing and you can't do that thing half speed. And I look at all these colleges hiring offensive line coaches as a part-time job or as a something where they're halftime job and it's doing a disservice to the lineman in my opinion and you're hindering your ability to be a cohesive unit and to be an upper echelon unit in my opinion. But it's unfortunately that's the way things are sometimes and that's the way things roll, but we always end up gravitating back to that position as is, but it's there's nothing better than it, and you and I both know that. The one thing that jumped out at me about, your coaching experience, and I really want to talk about this. You were the first professional paid football coach in Israeli history. Not a lot of people can say that. Not a lot of people can say they even coach. Yeah, not a lot of people can even say they coached in Israel. How did that come about? Talk to me about kind of how that situation presented itself and what that experience was like for you as a coach.
It's crazy because, you think something like that, when you say it, people go, wow, how could that be possible? Whatever. Right. It was very normal. I had been the head coach, ironically, at Temple Christian Academy here in Texas. They decided they were not really trying to expand their football program. And so I was looking for a new job. And at the time, now my ex-wife, but my wife and I were, looking to do some things and travel a little bit. We had just found out a couple of years back, both of us individually, which is very strange, that we were both Jewish. And it kind of changed our trajectory in life. Which is, those of us who found out about our Jewish heritage later in life, it always does. And so we were very interested in, our newfound heritage or faith. And ironically, it just kind of came out of the universe. I guess it's one of those things is just, the things that you desire also want you. And we saw a add on, I think it was AFCA for coaching in Israel. And I sent an email to the, ad with a cover letter, resume, whatever. And a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call from the owner of the Judean Rebels. And he's a Texan and played the linebacker at Baylor and was from Olney, Texas, which is a small town about 2 hours, 45 minutes northwest of Dallas. And we just started talking. He started saying, hey, I've started a team here. This Israeli Football League has been going on now for about 8 years. We're looking for a coach to bring in and actually, pay to be a professional coach. For the first time in this league. And it went from there. We talked a little bit on the phone. He flew here to Dallas-Fort Worth. And we had a dinner at a kosher Indian restaurant. And then a couple of weeks later, he offered me the job. And then, you know, I took a 11 and a half hour flight from Dallas to Tel Aviv. And it was an amazing experience. It's one of the foundational experiences in my life and in coaching. We were the first team, not only obviously to bring a professional coach, but we were the first team, as far as I know, in the Israeli Football League, to have Palestinians play with us. Most of my players were yeshiva students, and, I had a few American Olim, which is, the Hebrew word for immigrants, but mostly the players were native Israelis that, enjoyed football or enjoyed the idea of football, maybe played some rugby, and wanted something a little bit rougher. And we put together a roster and played through the season there. We're second place going into the playoffs and won our early playoff game. Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, you're good. Dogs,
going over there. We won our first playoff game and won our second playoff game and then ended up losing the semifinals to the eventual champion. And started something that has continued there. The Judean Rebels are still a part of the Israeli Football League. The league's expanded. I think they have, 13 teams now, in all parts of Israel, majority of it in Tel Aviv, Herzliya, Jerusalem, but, all over the country. It was a very interesting experience, because I was not only the head coach, but I was the director of football operations. my best story over there, we had ordered a bunch of equipment to come in. And in Israel, nothing comes into Israel without being inspected because of all the things that go on. And Israel having to be constantly on the defense for against terror and other things. Our equipment comes in. It comes into the airport at Ben Gurion, and we have to go to this place called Mamon, which is basically the customs and a trading place. And if something comes into the country, you have to go and clear it through them. And we go into this office, and literally, we're trying to explain that we have shoulder pads, helmets, et cetera, et cetera. And these people have zero idea what that is. And so every room we go into, we start speaking to the person in the room, and he listens for a couple of minutes, and our owner's talking to him in Hebrew, and I'm trying the best I can in broken Hebrew to say anything. And then eventually in English, the guy goes, no, I can't help you. You must go to whatever. And you go to the next office. And we spent probably 3.5 hours trying to explain what our equipment was, why it was there, what football was. I mean, it was, if there was a seventh circle of hell, it would have been Mamon in Ben Gurion Airport. We finally got somebody who had some idea, who was an upper level management person, who was able to look at the equipment and go, okay, this is sporting equipment, and label it and allow it to come through the country. We had no, we were really concerned that we were not going to be able to get our equipment into Israel to play the season because we could not explain what football was to this group of Israelis. And there's a term for Israelis called sabras. And what that term is, it's a term for a cactus that grows in Israel. And bottom line, when you talk about people who are supposedly native Israelis, they're called sabras because on the outside, they're prickly. Man, these people didn't want to help us at all. Now, on the inside, supposedly, they're sweet. And I really understood that as I lived there for the year that I was there. But, man, you talk about no customer service. I mean, none. And it was just a very interesting situation because one of the things you learn when you coach internationally is how blessed we are here in the United States, particularly when it comes to football, to just take for granted that our equipment is going to come, that we're going to be able to call BSN and get jerseys and all this other stuff that we as coaches deal with, because it's not that way in other countries. Number one, because our sport does not mean as much anywhere else other than here.
Right.
And like I said, the idea of just having this readily available, I can call my representative and in 2 weeks it'll ship, is a very American idea. Right. And, you know, like I said, I became very grateful for those things. Also, you know, I mean, you know, it was another lesson in dealing with people of different, like I said, different ethnicities, different cultures, different religions. The great thing was we never had a problem. Right. Palestinian, like I said, Haredi Orthodox Jew, never an issue. And I learned so much in my time there. I love Israel. I went back the year afterwards. The team wasn't able to pay me past that first year.
Right.
But I went back because the roster that I assembled ended up going to a championship game and winning the championship game the next year. I got to be there. I got to help call the game. And just I made some friends that I continue to stay in contact with. And are some of the, you know, people that I value most of my life. It was a great experience, and I'm thankful that my profession, my ability to coach football, allowed me to go experience something that I can't really even quantify in words about how important it was to me.
Right. No, I mean, that's, I mean, first and foremost, just getting to go overseas, period, and coach as an American is experience enough. I mean, it's like you were doing things that nobody even thought about doing, you know, and really ever even the idea never really crossed their mind, and you're over there doing it and being successful. So are those guys, is that team still active? Are they still playing?
Yeah, they're still playing. They are still in the league there. They won a couple championships after the one that I spoke of. And they've been one of the top teams in the league, you know, since then. One of the guys, to, you know, just kind of quantify the people I was dealing with there. One of the guys that I coached, his name is Uriah Loberbone. This guy, he about halfway through the season, he comes in and he is this 6'2" 300 plus pound wide shouldered freaking nose tackle. And he, you know, comes into a practice. He's just standing there. And I come and say, "Hey, how's it going?" He talks, he goes, you're the coach. I said, "Yes." He goes, "I never play football, but I want to, it looks fun. I like to hit people." Long story short, Uriah was a special forces guy in the Mossad.
Wow.
I mean, this guy is literally a badass.
Yeah.
You know, was a guy who has been in several conflicts, survived several conflicts there in Israel, has, you know, been in firefights in Gaza. I mean, just the guy is, but is the best guy, is one of the most coachable, most fun guys to be around. To this day, he sponsors the team, you know, obviously not playing anymore, but he, you know, has been very involved in the league there, and you know, involved in continuing to help the Rebels, you know, get what they need for equipment and practice facilities and yada, yada, yada. By the way, that's something else you have to deal with internationally. You don't just get to walk out of your field.
No, exactly. And go to practice, yeah.
You know, doesn't work like that.
Right.
So it is, I'm very, very proud. Every time I look and see the site, there's if you look up Israeli Football League, or you have to, you know, you may have to put American football in there. There's a website that has all the teams and you can track everything. In fact, I guess a couple of years back, the Rebels made TMZ. there was a little story, and you can look it up on TMZ. Every year, the Judean Rebels and the Jerusalem Kings, which is actually the team that the Rebels spawned out of, they play the Hanukkah Bowl. And so every year on Hanukkah or around there, the Kings and the Rebels play. And one year, like I said, maybe it was 2014, 2015, something like that, maybe even a little later. The TMZ came and recorded all that and recorded the game and did a whole bit on it. And I was just laughing my tail off, number one. Number two, was super happy that that you know, they were found and put on American television
for right.
Monica Ball. It was great. But yeah, so they are continuing to have success as a team, and they also have a youth team that is been part of that organization that is developing football there in Israel. So it's becoming a bigger and bigger thing.
Right.
The Crafts, who own the New England Patriots, are greatly involved in the league also, and have helped to build a couple of regulation football fields there in Israel. Help the league to continue to expand. And so, football's a big thing over there. People don't know it, but of all the sports that Israelis that are 20 through 55 say that they want to know more about or they want to play that they haven't yet, football's number one. So it's a very interesting, place and developmentally to see the people continue to expand their interest in the game. It's pretty cool.
Right. No, that's very cool. I mean, it's something obviously to be proud of, and that they're still continuing to thrive and be a big part of the society. That's really cool. I'm again looking through your resume, and we always kind of talk about coaches' resumes and things like that. One of the things that always sort of intrigues me, because I did it and obviously you did it as well, and you did it kind of to the nth degree, is what on top of that, talk to me about the struggles you had going from the three levels of coaching, high school, college, professional, as a coach. Talk to me about some of the struggles you might have had or were concerned with having that ended up being not an issue.
Well, I started my coaching career in college because right after I finished my playing career, I was bouncing around in camps. But the year the season after I finished my eligibility, I went back and was a GA at Southwest Baptist University, where mm-hmm. I graduated from. So I came up under a college, and at that time I was coaching D-line. My defensive coordinator was a guy that I was working with, and he was also my position coach during that time I was there. And so I got to kind of cut my teeth with that. One of the things that a lot of people don't talk about when it comes to GAs and that type of stuff, because they just don't know. You're playing with guys, and then you turn around the next year and you're supposed to be their coach.
Right.
And a lot of times they're just looking at you like, really? And then of course, when you got new guys in the building or whatever, and hell, they may have come from some JUCO and they may have, been a hell of a lot better player than you and whatever else. You wonder are these guys even paying attention to what I'm saying? And then of course, some of the very, very basic things in coaching, we take for granted, being able to draw up plays and being able to diagram things and being able to connect with players so that you're not just sitting there, drawing stuff up and then falling asleep in meetings and shit like that.
Right.
That was all stuff that I had to learn and continue to talk about with my defensive coordinator, because a lot of times he let me have my own room and then, he would ask players, coach, teach you guys what you need to know. And then it would be like, yeah, he got it, or no, I really didn't understand. And then he'd be like, look, man, when you're explaining this, you got to do X, Y, and Z. So at first it was, kind of that learning process. And the good thing was, is in that process, I learned a lot about the things that are necessary at all levels of coaching when it comes to organization, when it comes to how to work a room, making sure players are involved in meetings and film and stuff like that. And again, I did a lot of the dirty work that I guess people, kind of associate with being a GA. I moved dummies around, these big old tackling dummies that were freaking 200 pounds you had to drag across the field. I did equipment. I cut out, game charts and tracks, whatever amount of film, and did data entry and all that type of stuff. And those are all things you got to know at any level of coaching. And even if you're not directly involved with it, when you get to being a coordinator or head coach, you still have to understand how to do it. You still have to understand where the things are in it to make it better, make it more efficient. And those things have been invaluable throughout my career. And coaches talk about this all the time, but it really it's one of the few things that, you know, on coaching Twitter and all stuff where every, you know, every coach has the answer and a meme for your entire career.
Right.
The truth of the matter is that you, if you don't understand all that stuff early in your career and are willing to do the jobs that don't seem glamorous, when it comes down to you being in charge of something, you're going to literally be in a position where you don't know how to fix something. And that's a major issue. Right. Because you're looking at somebody else at that point who you've hired, who's supposed to be under your stead, and they don't know how to fix it, and you don't know how to fix it. So now somebody else has to, and that's never a good place to be in. So that was very instrumental in allowing me to move back and forth between the levels that I have. I got a chance, like I said, I've gotten a chance a couple times to be up with some pro, you know, teams in the IFL with the Frisco Fighters, and the difference there, and it's funny because I hear, you know, high school coaches and talk about, you know, what does it take to go to the college level? What is it, you know, how's it different? Well, here's the thing that's different. Number one, at the high school level, a lot of times you're working with kids who have no knowledge base, and you have to explain to them things that they are not familiar with at all.
Right.
And you have to be very detail-oriented. You have to help them understand, you know, every aspect of something. A lot of times at the pro level, you've got guys who understand all that, and they're not interested as much in, you know, this is, you know, exactly how to do X, Y, and Z basic whatever. And you have to connect with them when you're correcting them and say, look, man, you know, the reason that you can't get to the quarterback on this particular play is because, you know, when you long arm this guy, you're not putting any leverage into his shoulder, and, you know, you've got to, you know, be able to, you know, get his corner. And so, you know, if you don't do this and, you know, take his leverage off, then there's no way you're going to get there.
Right.
And they're going to talk back. A lot of times, right, pros, you know, that's what they, you know, those guys are grown men. They're grown, yes, ass men are trying to get themselves to the NFL or whatever. And they're going to talk back and say, nah, but coach, I was trying to do X, Y, and Z. And if you're one of those guys in coaching where you don't go, oh, well, that's disrespect, man, you are not going to last at the pro level because they're, right, going to eat you alive. Particularly when you're talking about the NFL, where those guys make 10 times more money than you and are far more important than you are to the freaking organization. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and sometimes at, like, I mean, even at the college level, sometimes they're right. I mean, let's be honest. Sometimes those kids are right because they see it. They see what's going on out there. And that might be something that we as coaches miss. I mean, that's what I always used to tell kids at when I was coaching at the college level. When they can tell me what they did wrong or why they did something or the reasoning behind it using our terminology, our words, they're getting it. They're understanding, you know, and then sometimes, you know, sometimes they are wrong, but sometimes they are right. And they do know what's happening. And that's a sign, in my opinion, of good coaching and of those kids getting it and those guys getting it. So it's, I get what you're saying though, obviously with the talking back bit, because like you said, it's their livelihood. It's their job too. So it's a bit of the double-edged sword, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you said it right. Even if they're wrong, and let's say that, you know, that there's a better answer for what they're trying to get at, and, you know, maybe they don't hear you at that moment. If they're talking back to you, they're involved. And right, instead of just, yeah, okay, whatever, coach, and then I'm going to do it the same way and end up in the same problem and then get frustrated, they're trying to figure it out with you. And that's really what we do. We don't have all the answers as coaches, particularly since we're not the guys who are taking the contact anymore. We're not the guys who are, you know, getting our freaking, you know, hands and arms, everything shoved in our face. We're not the guys who are having to, you know, pass it against the guy who runs a 4.6 and is built like, you know, freaking Atlas.
Right.
So those are the, you know, their input is crucial. And that's, you know, something I try to develop with my high school kids too, because a lot of times, obviously, high school kids are afraid to voice what they have to say and afraid to say, hey, coach, this is what the issue is. But I try to tell those guys, particularly with offensive linemen, look, y'all have to communicate not only with me, but y'all got to communicate with each other. If you've got the guy that's playing that three technique right there, and y'all are trying to double team him on the inside zone, and you can't quite get that angle right, you've got to talk to the guy next to you and say, hey, man, I need a little bit of hand, you know, for you to leave a hand for you on the linebacker, or hey, let's just drive this guy straight back into the linebacker, and then we'll deal with him, because if not, we're not going to get him blocked. You got to be able to communicate with those guys as well as with your coaches. And I think that's a skill that good coaches develop, like you said, at all levels for their players, and that they encourage. And yeah, like you said, if they're wrong or if there's something, then you can have you talk with that player and say, look, man, I'm telling you, there's a better way here, and let me show it to you, and let's see if we can work out something. And then when they take ownership of it, then it'll be good for them. And that's what matters, obviously. Right. And it's the same thing we talk about all the time with a lot of the guys that we're associated with on Twitter. It's so much more about relationships the higher you go in the coaching world than it is about, you know, being the best technical guy. Now, technical is important, particularly at the pro level, because if you don't know your shit, they're gonna find out fast.
Right.
The relationships you have with those guys is what allows you to speak into their life, and it's so important.
Right. No doubt. I mean, that's the nitty gritty of it when you get down to it. That's what it's all about. So.
Yeah.
I don't want to rush you. This stupid, I forget about Zoom, and it has a timer now on it, so we only got a couple minutes left. So
yeah,
real quick, you know, last question. If you could put together a Mount Rushmore of offensive linemen from guys you coached, guys you played with, or, you know, just guys you're a casual fan of, who would be on that 5-man offensive line?
Man, that's always such a tough question, but I'll do as quick as I can. I've been in Dallas a lot of my life, so
yep.
When I think of offensive line, that 90s Cowboys line, if I were to make it a short answer, it would be those guys. I mean,
right.
Stepnoski, Allen, Tuane, Newton, Eric Williams, those guys were so impressive and still are every time I look at them in film. The first time I went to see Charles Bentley over at O-Line Performance and really got oriented to biomechanics, you know, in coaching – offensive line, he showed some game film of those guys from the end zone angle, and let me tell you something, that was
right.
The best part of the entire seminar. I mean, there were so many good things. I'm indebted to LaCharles and O-Line Performance for a lot of the things that have happened in my career, but man, watching those guys operate was crazy good. And you know, it's been a pleasure, like I said, to watch, you know, guys like Zach Martin here, you know, recent game, be able to play, and even Travis Frederick, who retired a couple years ago. Those guys were so good. Tyron Smith, even though, like I said, with the injuries, I mean, there's not a more prototypical, I think, left tackle than Tyron Smith. And it's not just Cowboys. I mean, obviously, I looked at guys all around the league.
The Wisconsin people would argue with you about that. Just FYI, just letting you know, the cheesehead families and the Badger fans will argue with you about Tyron Smith. So that's definitely a big debate.
I just, like I said, I can't think of anybody who fits that bill better, and I'm up for that debate. I want all the smoke.
I remember, so just so you know, I just paid Zoom, so we're good, so we don't have to rush. Yeah.
Okay, well, you don't have to do that.
But
appreciate it, though.
I need to do it anyways. I remember seeing a picture of Tyron Smith when he was in high school before he went to USC, and they used to do this Street and Smith National High School Preview magazine. And I remember seeing a picture of him, and he was like 6'6", 270, and looked like a bodybuilder. I mean, was, you know, bowling ball shoulders and a six pack abs, and just like, this is an offensive lineman. This is like, seriously, this is an offensive tackle. Yeah. But he kind of, you know, I don't want to say he revolutionized the position, but he definitely made it. Whereas, like, you don't have to be a big sloppy guy anymore. You can be a sleek athlete who's just a massive human being and get to the highest level, obviously, and arguably, you know, I think there's a lot of push for him to be a future Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. So it's, he definitely, I will put him up there No question about it, but he just changed the way, kind of as an athlete, offensive linemen were looked at, I think.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And, of course, it's really the evolution of the game. When you've got guys, you know, like Joey Bosa rushing you, it's hard to be sloppy because your body, you have to be able to control every aspect of your body when you're passing against somebody like that and be able to redirect and be able to, you know, replace hands. And you have to be just as sleek and just as agile as those guys that are on the edge.
Right.
And like you said, Tyron Smith has kind of moved that evolution on. You know, now, obviously, there are guys that are continuing to be just big, massive human beings that play the tackle positions. It's funny, when I was younger, I got to go to Cowboys camp, and I got to meet and stand next to Flozell Adams. I don't know
the if hotel. People
remember him. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. This was the biggest human being that I've ever physically stood next to. Now, he was not a sloppy guy either, but he was, you know, not Tyron Smith.
Right.
But the guy was just so massive and so big and so long-armed. You're like, how's anybody going to rush this guy? And, you know, obviously, he was also partially deaf. I was like, man, how does
that I didn't know that. Wow.
That a lot of times, you know, obviously people who didn't, you know, or whatever, Cowboy haters, and we'll say that, but also people who didn't, you know, care much for him would say, oh, well, he's consistently all sides. Well, he was partially deaf. And right. So, like I said, I'm not so sure how that worked, but yeah, that was part of the reason he had a lot of offsides calls, because I guess he somehow or another he's using his visual to right. be able to be on the snap count all the time, because I know we couldn't hear it, particularly in an NFL stadium. But yeah, just a massive human being. And there are still plenty of those. You know, I've been, like I said, blessed to work with some really good guys. A couple of names just randomly of guys in my career. Kent Perkins, I was able to coach him at Lake Highlands High School. In Dallas. He is the starting left tackle for the BC Lions right now. And if you guys in the United States who are watching Canadian football to stave off your, your withdrawals from American football during the summer when nothing's on, watch him at left tackle for the BC Lions. He's done a great job of learning how to play at the professional level. He played at Texas, came out into the NFL, was in camp with Cincinnati, was in camp with Houston for a little bit, and then was in the XFL the first time it came around. But then, like I said, really found a home in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud of him. I mean, the guy's was a great kid and a great guy. But he has really gotten, like, I watch him all the time. I'm like, man, this guy's got freaking pass sets down to a science. And those people who know about Canadian football know it's harder to pass set in Canada as an offensive lineman, because you've got this yard space that's mandatory, and you would think that would give offensive linemen an advantage, but it really doesn't, because there's more space to play in.
Right.
And anytime we talk about offensive linemen, the more space you have, the easier it is for a defensive, you know, player to, you know, really excel, because that's the one thing offensive linemen don't really do well is playing space. But I've really enjoyed that, watching him go. And a name for college fans this year to watch. And this is not related, I guess, to the offensive line, but it was the guy that my guys were blocking for this year, Amarion Peterson. You're going to hear that name at USC. He was our running back at Hershey High School in Wichita Falls. He went and actually graduated early so that he could be there with USC in the spring as a running back. He will stand next to Caleb Williams. He'll start in that backfield at some point here in the next year. So name to watch, the kid's a beast, and I really enjoyed coaching the offensive line and him running behind it, and being able to interact with him this year. But he's going to be a guy that's, you know, in the future that people are going to hear about. It's always a good thing. You know, one of those things that people who don't talk about with offensive line is that relationship with your running backs, and, you know, particularly if you're a run game coordinator and dealing with that, you're always going to have those running backs right there next to that offensive line if, you know,
right.
you have things organized right. And it's so fun when your guys, you know, do a great job, and then the guy behind you ends up being at another school and watching them. And, you know, guys always rooting for them. And, of course, like I said, I had a great year with the guys I had this year. And, you know, a couple of them went on to college. But, you know, watching him standing there with USC and Lincoln Riley coaching will be fun this year. So, yeah, be a good thing for, you know, those Wisconsin football fans that are around you to watch when they come play in the Big 12.
The Big Ten with 16 teams now. The Big Ten's got enough problems. The Big Ten's got enough problems right now, so they don't need to worry about USC. But well, that's a story for another podcast, right?
Right.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you coming on. Before I get you out here, do me a favor, drop your Twitter handle and any other information the listeners need to know.
All right. On Twitter, you follow me at CoachRogers92. That's the Twitter handle that I'm active on. I also am Instagram, CoachRogers92. I post way more on Twitter than I do on anything else. Other than that, like I said, if you're in Texas and looking at high school football, Trimble Tech High School in Fort Worth, we're a 5A Division II team. And so we'll be, around on TV and things like that. Anybody, like I said, who wants to correspond about offensive line or, wide zone or anything of those type of situations, or just from offensive lineman, perspective as a coordinator, like I said, hit me up on Twitter and we can talk. Other than that, like I said, I really don't do a lot of social, but it's the one place you can find me.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. Best of luck this season. Hopefully we talk a little bit more before and, looking forward to watching your guys' success.
You guys also, congratulations on the head coaching position, and I hope that you guys run Wisconsin over there.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
All right.
The Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by the online clinic at Chief Pigskin. The online clinic by Chief Pigskin is a collection of coaching content from over a decade of travels from a high school coach. With video quality that is unmatched, you should check them out at clinic.chiefpigskin.com.